A very good Thursday. It is a January 6th edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Before we get started with the show here today, a few reminders. Pecan Day has been moved to April 6th at Yuba City, California. The California Walnut Conference is now April 7th and April 8th at Yuba City, California. And the North Valley Nut Conference will be on June 8th in Orland, California. Taylor Chalstrom will start off the show with a report about delayed spring growth and grapevine production during drought. That report will kick things off right after this word from one of our sponsors.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Farm advisors and consultants in the San Joaquin Valley received a multitude of calls in 2021 after grapevine bud break, reporting things like delayed and erratic bud break, stunted shoot growth, and even excessive berry shatter and poor fruit set. While various geographic locations depicted different severities of these symptoms, UCCE viticulture farm advisor George Zhuang said that there are a couple reasons for the high volume of calls, namely winter drought between November 2020 and February 2021, and freeze events, which caused delayed spring growth.
Last year, you know, was dry, but, you know, it's I would say it's very close to the winter drought we observed in 2015 or 2016. The reason why last year was extremely, you know, I would say the worst was really the double kill. Basically, you have the winter drought. On top of that, you had unexpected freeze early November back in 2020. So I think the two factors combined together make that situation the worst, That's kind of explain a lot of people which were kind of desperate to see the situation last year was extremely, worse.
In the time that Zhuang has been a viticulture farm advisor in the Fresno area since 2015, he said this is the worst he's seen this issue.
I remember when I started my job, there was a huge concern in terms of, the droughts. And I think 2015 was the peak of the historic California drought. So we had a 5 or 6 years a drought period in that same time zone. So when I started my job back in January 2015, there was a huge concern about the water situation, the drought situation. But typically, after harvest, we don't see a lot of significant damage or significant loss on the yield or on the quality at a harvest from those winter droughts. So you're right. Last year was an extreme case and has been the worst since I came to Fresno County as a farm advisor.
Zhuang also noted that growers have management options that can help to mitigate the effects of delayed spring growth during susceptible years, and said that these options do differ based on the geographic region of a vineyard in the state. He also said growers need to be proactive when it comes to delayed spring growth.
Typically, when growers call me about the delayed spring growth or the stunted shoot development after bud break, that was already too late to implement most of the management options are offered. So growers just have to keep that in mind. You have to be really proactive in terms of drought situation, any potential freeze events, really act before those events occur. That's probably the best strategies. But yes, like I said, there's a couple of management options you can have in face of those potential, drought situation or the freeze events. Luckily, right now we have a pretty reliable weather forecast data from either National Weather Service or from NASA. So there was a pretty good reliable prediction for those kind of events. So growers really have to be on alert for those kind of events, for drought or freeze events, in case we're gonna have those events occur in the next few weeks. The most important things for the grower to do is make sure, first thing, make sure the stress on the vines is really kind of a minimum. So here we're talking about different stress, right? Talking about, you know, you could be have a overcrop situation on your vines. So you have a large crop, you know, for this year, and after harvest, you have to make sure those vines are kind of, you know, strong and viable for the coming freeze and drought situations. So a lot of things you can do, make sure you put post-harvest fertilizers, make sure you have the post-harvest irrigations. So every time you have those kind of stress, make sure you can do all those things to make sure vines are healthy, strong, and they can be, you know, viable enough to face those challenging environments, like I said, freeze and drought situation.
In any case of delayed spring growth, Zhuang said that growers need to be looking at their older orchards as well, which might be the most susceptible.
Besides overcrop, there's a you know, pest and disease. That's another thing, you know, especially in Fresno area. Typically, those older vineyards and older raisin field, typically they have a lot of you know, trunk disease, nematodes situation there. So when we have those you know, freeze and drought combined together, those will be a very tough situation for those older vineyards because it already has some underlying condition like you know, soil pest, nematodes, and disease. So you know, I think growers have to bear in mind and they have to do all those good things to make sure the vines are you know, strong and viable. So that's the things. Make sure the stress is really minimal. Besides, you know. All those, you know, situation there.
Something that has been learned is that young vines are also extremely susceptible to these drought or freeze events.
If growers, you have like new vineyard or you planted the, you know, the year before or the 2 years old young vines, you just have to be very careful, you know, make sure sometimes I always suggest growers, you can maybe do a little bit more or overkill in terms of you know water or nutrient management, just to make sure those young vines will be you know strong because you know every time we have the baby vines, you know it's going to be more tender and susceptible to you know stress or different things. So like again, you know if you have young vines, be extremely careful. Maybe put additional efforts. Besides your traditional management options. Then I think, one thing we found very interesting from last year is some, those are kind of tender varieties. What I mean tenders, those like, canopy typically is very weak. It's not like a vigorous canopies, tends to have a more like, DSG symptoms from last year events. For example, like a Pinot Grigio or Zinfandel, those kind of weak varieties. It's not like, compared to a French Colombard or Muscat, those kind of tender, weaker varieties, it's going to be a little bit more risky for them to have those DSG symptoms. So growers have to be careful about different varieties. You know, if you have like more susceptible varieties like a Pinot Grigio or Zinfandel, you know, pay additional attention, maybe, you know, add a little bit more water and fertilizers after harvest. So those can protect those vines from those potential damage.
At the end of the day, Zhuang said really the most important thing that growers can do to protect their vines is applying water even during dry years. The cost of water will offset the cost of the damage associated with water stress.
Most likely, most case I saw from the field is the vineyard lacks of irrigation from last 2 years. So those vines, you know, they suffer with water stress, no water in the soil. They tend to, crash more significantly when there's like, you know, freeze or drought situation in winter. So, make sure you have, good water management plans. That's probably most important things. And talking about the different geographic regions in Fresno, you know, typically we will see if you have a vineyard on the west side of Fresno, west side when we mean you know, close to I-5 or a little bit west side of Kerman, typically if you have a vineyard on that area, there's more risk of a severe winter freeze. And we can easily find the data from different weather stations. Like I have my weather stations, like, you know, about 7 weather stations in Fresno across different regions. And every year we check the, you know, the temperature across the year. Typically we found that, you know, if you have a weather station on the west side of Kerman, those areas tend to have a more lower minimum temperature in the wintertime, like, you know, December, January. So those areas has more risk to get like a, you know, potential freeze damage. So, you know, if I were a grower, have a farmer, have a vineyard in the west side of Fresno, I'll be probably put more water, you know, in the wintertime to protect those vines, because, you know, the water is actually a storage of heat. So every time, you know, you put water into the soil, it's actually provide actual heat to the vines, to the roots. So, you know, if I have a vineyard on the west side of Fresno, water is your friend.
This method of irrigating prior to a freeze event is very similar to something that also occurs in walnuts. The water acts as sort of a warmer for the soil.
Every time, you know, put the water there, is basically a protection, you know, right? Provide a heat back to the plants. But the ironic situation that, you know, when we have a winter drought, the water is really a tough situation. You know, I talk with different growers. You know, they understand the situation. They want to put water there, but, you know, when they have a drought, it's just difficult to do that. So, you know, so I'll suggest growers, you know, think about this. Okay, I know you have a drought situation, but if you have well, you know, you make sure you can pump the water, at least, you know, put some water for the plants, because the damage from the freeze or damage from DSG will be more severe than the cost of pumping water in that very difficult time.
Another issue that Zhuang said growers have to look out for with delayed spring growth is the fact that some of its symptoms are often similar to those of other orchard issues, such as winter freeze damage or pest and disease symptoms. He noted that it is important to differentiate delayed spring growth from these issues.
You will see those DSG or the stunted growth interact with, for example, you know, nematode situation or some trunk disease situation on the vines. So sometimes it's very hard to draw a clear line. And typically I'll suggest, you know, if growers, you have some questions or any concerns, you can always call me or call your local farm advisor. That's part of our job, to go to the farm, right? To tell exactly what's going on there. So that's probably the number one situations, you know, probably easier. But second, I know some growers really want to, you know, find some easy way for them to identify, is that really a DSG or is something else? So let's put a very in general, okay? Typically, every time we talk about disease vines, either trunk disease or nematodes, you will find the symptoms on those vines from those, you know, the host or the pest. For example, if it's really a trunk disease, the easiest way to cut the vines, cut either the cordons or cut the trunk. Typically, you will see the discoloration, or we call canker, on those trunk, on the cutting area. So you will see sometimes the pie shape or pizza shape. Sometimes I'll see that, you know, on those you know, cutting area of the trunk or cordons. So you can tell that is really from the disease, from different fungus of the trunk disease. Or, you know, you can dig out the roots. You'll see different like kind of you know, tumor or swollen on the roots. Typically, that's a nematode. So if it's really caused by disease or pest, it's very easy to find the damage from the host. But the problem for DSG, typically when you cut the vines or you dig out the roots, you will not see a typical, you know, discoloration or any kind of, you know, pest feeding on those tissues. It typically just feel dry. Like I, you know, observed with my colleagues last year, once you cut the trunk or cut the cordons, you don't see a significant discoloration, canker, or pie shape of you know, this kind of a browning color. Instead, you'll see very dry. If you put your fingers, you feel this cutting area is very dry. Typically, if a healthy vines, once you cut the top, typically they're gonna have some water or some sap flow came out from the roots, pumping the water or pumping from the, you know, from the xylem tissues. So you'll feel there's moisture. There's a water from those cutting area, but like those DSG vines, these were so dry, they just basically nothing going on there. So you cut those, you feel it's very dry. That tells you, you know, that's most likely from DSG or from any potential freeze events. So here I want to make it clear, because every time we talk about DSG, there are two things we have to put together. And sometimes it's very hard to separate from one to another. Typically DSG, we think it's from a drought, which is from lack of water in the soil. So there's no water for the vines to take up from the soil. So, you know, you feel very dry vines and the vines does not want to grow because there's no water for them to grow. But, you know, sometimes the dry soil can interact with the freeze damage. We talk about this. Every time you have a dry soil, there's no water in the soil, it's more easier for the vines to get freeze damage. So it's always interact with each other. Sometimes it's hard to say it's really from the freeze damage or it's from lack of water in the soil. And typically I'll see, you know, it's probably both. And those two factors interact with each other, right? Because one can cause another one, right? So it's kind of hard to draw a clear line between the lack of water in the soil and the freeze events or freeze damage. So, but you know, typically it can very easy to distinguish those DSG vines from pest or disease. That one thing is cut them up and you typically see the discoloration or the bugs or the pest feeding on the roots. So those are pretty clear cut.
In general, given the effects that climate change has had on the state of California in recent decades, it is likely that these types of events will be here to stay. While Zhuang is not anything of a climate scientist, he does agree that this is likely the case.
Generally speaking, I think we're going to have more extreme weather events, like last year, very dry winter, and have a very early freeze events back in November 2020. So here's my take. I did the same interview with NPR last week, talking about the climate change. What's the options for the growers here in the valley to basically, you know, still, you know, be sustainable and productive, even with those extreme conditions. And here's my answers to this, because, you know, if you think about grapes. Grapes is a pretty resilient crop, you know. I cannot speak about another crop, like, you know, probably my colleagues from another from UCCE can talk about more almonds or pistachios. But, you know, I'll see grapes is probably the top crop, which is resilient to a climate change, either a dry winter or a hot summertime. And the reason for grape become very resilient because we do have a lot of options. For example, one of the projects I'm working on is looking at different rootstocks, right? Because, you know, the grapevines take the water from the roots, right? If we can have a better rootstocks, go deeper and be more drought resistant or drought tolerant, even with same winter drought, you know, some vines will collapse and, you know, crash because of the lack of water in the soil. Some vines with a better rootstocks, those rootstocks can go deeper and find the water or somehow become more drought resistant so they can survive. They will still, you know, lose yields, still have some damage there, but they won't crash, right? Like another vines or another vineyards. So that's one of the projects right now I'm working on. Actually I have 2 acres of experimental vineyard on the UC Westside Research Station at the Five Points, you know, it's right next to the I-5. So the 2 acres of the rootstock trial, we're looking at, you know, 9 different rootstocks on about 11 varieties. So we try to do a screening trial to see, you know, which rootstock with which varieties can give us the most promising results. Because here's the thing, if this climate change gonna, you know, go on or head to the direction as we expected, so we're gonna have a, you know, potentially more drought in the winter. And every time we have a drought, you're gonna have also salinity, right? Because, you know, the crop use water and they're gonna have, you know, salinity build up into the soil. So you're gonna have water, have a drought plus salinities. So the bigger focus for that project, 2 acres on the west side, is try to look at, you know, how those are the rootstock handle both situation, drought and salinity. So Yes, you know, I think, you know, there are options for grape industry. At least we are working on that way to find I don't want to say a silver bullets, but try to find some, you know, ideal rootstocks for growers here to be still sustainable, even with those extreme conditions like we had last year.
Just ahead on the My Ag Life Daily News Report, a check-in of regional and national agricultural news. Let your bees carry a beneficial biofungicide directly to flowers and reduce brown rot, blossom blight, and jacket rot. Sign up for a field trial of bee vectoring and the biofungicide Vectorite with CR7 on your almond orchard. Deadline is January 15th for setup and use at the start of your February bloom. Email contact at beevt.com. Time for a check-in of regional news. Agricultural exporters moving goods out of the Port of Oakland, California could get more ability to move their products onto an outgoing ship. The Port of Oakland has announced plans to improve the flow of ag exports following an emergency meeting last month with state and federal officials about port congestion. The Oakland Port will open and operate a 25-acre off-terminal yard equipped to move containers and store them for rapid pickup. The container yard will provide access to equipment and offer faster truck turns without having to wait for in-terminal space. Along with that, state and federal agricultural agencies will help ag exporters utilize the new container yard. About half of all exports out of the Port of Oakland are tied to agriculture, and the port is considered the preferred export getaway for most California ag exports and refrigerated protein products, according to the port. Typically, cargo volume at the port is about 50% of exports and 50% of imports, creating parity for inbound cargo and emptying container for exports. But like the ports at Los Angeles and Long Beach, Oakland also has seen a surge of imports clogging up the ports and displacing both ships and containers available to exports, especially shipments of farm goods. The Oakland port has seen significant drops in export volumes due to skipped sailings of crucial export lines and lack of equipment for export cargo. Port congestion along the West Coast has been a major issue for more than a year, but the supply chain crisis drew more attention as 2021 saw record container imports that have clogged the ports and backed up both ships and truckers moving goods. Californians won't be able to water their lawns for 48 hours after rainstorms or let their sprinklers run onto the sidewalk under mandatory water restrictions that state regulators adopted this past Tuesday as drought conditions continued despite heavy December rain and snow. The rules could take effect as soon as the end of this month and could result in a fine of up to $500 a day. The regulators stressed they want to encourage voluntary conservation and that it will be up to local authorities to decide on enforcement. The State Water Resources Control Board's action comes as Californians continue to fall short on Governor Gavin Newsom's call for voluntary 15% reduction in water use compared to last year. Between July and November, the state's water usage went down just 6%. The new restrictions follow an extremely wet December that state officials warn may not continue during the winter months that normally are the state's wettest. Weather patterns have become more unpredictable due to climate change, and state climatologist Michael Anderson says forecasts show February and March could be drier than average. The Center for Produce Safety has funded 12 new projects valued at just over $3.9 million to help answer the industry's most urgent produce food safety questions. The topics included in the 12 projects are risk evaluation and mitigation of listeria, salmonella, cyclospora control, and sanitation for harvesting bins and picking bags. From leafy greens to tree fruits to onions, the research has been vetted by industry experts. Dr. Joy Waite Kusek, associate professor at Oregon State University, is leading one of two CPS-funded onion research projects. Dr. Waite Kusek stated that dry bulb onions have generally been considered a low-risk crop, but a 2020 outbreak happened in the United States and more recently an outbreak associated with onions from Mexico. The U.S. outbreak investigation failed to identify the cause of salmonella contamination. The CPS project is designed to evaluate how specific industry practices, including water and clay applications, may contribute to widespread contamination and could result in an outbreak. First-time CPS-funded scientist, Kansas State University Associate Professor Dr. Valentina Trinetta said that the research aims to develop science-based recommendations that will help improve cleaning and sanitation practices for harvesting operations while managing food safety risks to sanitation of picking bags and harvesting bins for the tree fruit industry. All projects will begin in January. Findings will be reported to the industry by researchers at CPS's annual research symposium and via CPS through other knowledge transfer activities, including the CPS website. The International Fresh Produce Association is a global trade association representing the fresh produce and floral supply chains. The association represents the interests, individuals, and organizations across a global supply chain of all sizes and specialties. It is also positioned to serve as a resource and partner for media, policymakers, and change leaders invested in the solutions the industry has the power to provide. It is an association formed under the leadership of two previous fresh produce and floral associations, which are United Fresh Produce Association and the Produce Marketing Association. IFPA will advocate nationally and globally for the fresh supply chains throughout government advocacy and leadership, especially in the North American market. The association will also grow connections within the industry and between the industry and the world for better outcomes of both. They will also guide the industry and partners with expertise on the IFPA team and through volunteer leaders. And San Diego-based Too Simple, a global autonomous driving technology company, successfully completed the world's first fully autonomous semi-truck run on open public roads without a human in a vehicle and without human intervention. The run took place on December 22nd and required Too Simple's upfitted autonomous semi-truck to begin its journey from a large rail yard in Tucson, Arizona, and travel more than 80 miles on surface streets and highways at night, safely arriving at a high-volume distribution center in the Phoenix metro area. Too Simple's autonomous driving system successfully navigated surface streets, traffic signals, on-ramps, off-ramps, emergency lane vehicles, and highway lane changes in open traffic while naturally interacting with other motorists. It is the first time a Class 8 autonomous truck has been operated on open public roads without a human in a vehicle and without human intervention. It's part of an ongoing test program that will continue into 2022. National Agricultural News coming your way right after this.
The Musco Family Olive Company is leading the transformation of the table olive industry. We are committed to the California olive grower and invite you to grow with our family. Modern table olive orchards apply newly perfected, state-of-the-art planting and harvesting to one of the world's oldest tree crops for proven superior results. Musco is proud to be America's favorite olive, offering Pearls and early California brands loved nationwide. There is opportunity in any crop transition, and Musco is proud to offer long-term contracts and free trees to our grower partners. Visit our website at www.olives.com/milliontrees to join the table olive revolution.
The U.S. dairy industry is claiming a victory over Canada's dairy import limits in the first trade dispute case brought under the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. The dispute panel agreed with the U.S. that Canada is not meeting its commitments under USMCA in the way that Canada set up its tariff rate quotas for dairy products exclusively for Canadian processors. The arbitration panel that heard the dispute cited Canada cannot in substance ring-fence and limit to processors a reserved pool of dairy supply that only grants access to Canadian dairy processors. U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
The theory, I think, was that our dairy industry would be allowed to market these products to a variety of potential purchasers in Canada so that the tariff rate quota could be met by virtue of retail purchases, by virtue of wholesale purchasing in Canada. What the Canadians did is they basically funneled the contracts and the agreements to a handful of purchasers, and those purchasers were not necessarily interested, nor could they use all of the U.S. dairy products that are covered under these tariff rate quotas. So the result is the quota wasn't being met. And I think we were essentially saying, you've got to go beyond the traditional processors. You've got to provide us more market opportunity here. And I think that's essentially the essence of the agreement. We're now going to have more market opportunity for those 14 TRQs. So more dairy product is going to be sold in Canada, which is obviously good news. It was expected and anticipated at the time USMCA was negotiated that this could result in somewhere between $200 and $300 million of additional sales in Canada of dairy products. And so hopefully with this ruling, we'll see that.
The panel ruled Canada has until February 3rd to change how it allocates TRQs, and the U.S. can place tariffs or other measures against Canadian products.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing. Learn more at walnuts.org.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Joining me here today for an interview is Chris Christian, and she is the Senior Vice President for the California Strawberry Commission. Chris, you told me 90% of U.S. grown strawberries are raised in California. What are some of the challenges that producers incur in doing that?
You know, we face a lot of challenges in the industry, as do all crops, but some are unique to strawberries. We don't have along the Central Coast the water challenges that farmers face more in the Central Valley. Ours are, of course, around labor, around land cost, around the encroachment of urban development. People like to live where strawberries like to grow. So that's an ongoing challenge that leads to rising land costs for our farmers. And, you know, as inflation is hitting all sectors of agriculture right now, a lot of our input costs have increased significantly in terms of land preparation, things like drip irrigation, the mulch, the plastic mulch that we use in the field, the packaging that we harvest the strawberries into and transport it, all of those costs are rising and have risen significantly over the last year. Transportation costs have also risen. So there are always any number of challenges that farmers face out in the fields.
And I'm sure some of that is also part of the supply chain issue too. Like you mentioned, some of those plastics and some of the different materials you need just to have your cartons.
Yes, exactly. So we haven't experienced major disruption or anything like that. There have just been some delays in terms of getting our ground put together for, you know, our ground put in planting for the coming year. But there haven't been major disruptions for strawberries. We do not ship through the ports. If our product is going overseas, it's going via air. So we don't have those types of delays. Where those types of delays would affect us would be on any materials that might be coming in through those venues.
Then does the Strawberry Commission act as an advocacy platform, or how do you step in and help growers with these types of issues?
We work to represent, you know, our farmers and to represent the interests of our farmers with elected officials, local officials. We work very heavily on a number of issues around agriculture. We have created probably the largest grower education and outreach program that exists in the state of California. We have a team of grower education specialists who've created this on-farm education program, and this is for growers, supervisors, and farm workers. And what we are doing is we have a series of virtual and in-person courses that address many, many topics. These include regulatory topics, supervisor development, heat illness prevention, pesticide safety, wildfire smoke mitigation are some examples, and also supervisor soft skills, dealing with employee situations, resolving situations in a positive manner. And of course, we started our program in food safety. That's been the foundation of our food safety, recognizing that our product is hand harvested. And so we have these trainings are completely done in Spanish. As many had to during the pandemic, we had to pivot from in-person to virtual. We now have about 9.5 hours of virtual training content that is available, but we are also now moving back to really what is the strength of our program, which is in-person trainings in our production districts that are fully conducted in Spanish.
Once again, I want to thank my guests for joining me here today, Chris Christian, Senior Vice President of the California Strawberry Commission.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That concludes our show for today. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. From the entire JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.